Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I gotta be me. I gotta be me.
That is the legendary Sammy Davis Jr. A man who, man, I wish I had been able to see in person. One of those lifetime bucket list people that I unfortunately never got around to seeing. Sammy Davis Jr. was not just an amazing talent as a singer and dancer and tap dancer and actor and impressionist. He was also the first African-American to be invited by a president to spend a night in the Lincoln bedroom at the White House. And now he's the subject of a new documentary called Sammy Davis Jr., I Gotta Be Me, which is going to screen this Saturday night at Washington University as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. The man who directed that and another documentary called Acorn and the Firestorm, which will screen Sunday afternoon at the Tivoli, is Sam Pollard, who's going to be in St. Louis this weekend, where he's going to get the Film Festival's Lifetime Achievement Award, and joins me now on KTRS. Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Good. Did you get to see Sammy live?
Never had the opportunity, sadly. Never had the opportunity like you, and I wish I had. The closest I ever got was to watch him many, many times on the Ed Sullivan Show and Hollywood Palace, in movies like Ocean's 11 and Sergeant 3, Marvin the Seven Hoods.
Yeah. And not only that, Laughing and pretty much
Laughing,
pretty much every variety
family
show of the 70s, yeah, as well.
He never said no to anything. He would be on everybody's show. Merv Griffin's show, Mike Douglas' show, Donna Shore's show. You know, he was always around.
And was a money in the bank guest for all those hosts as well.
Yeah, he was. He was a very popular entertainer.
Yeah.
You know, the last of the great entertainers to come out of that whole period of vaudeville in the 20s and 30s.
One of the things that you talk about in your documentary is the trouble that he had with both white audiences and black audiences. He suffered bigotry from whites, and some African-American audiences perceived him as a sellout, right?
Yeah, it was sort of a double-edged sword, Sammy. I mean, you know, he was striving and struggling to make it, and when he made it, he had to deal with, you know, breaking down the walls and segregation, being asked to go to the back of the door in many places that he wanted to go to the front door. And at the same time, as he started to become more of a success, he had black people in the community who felt like he had forgot where he came from. Now he was associating with people like Sinatra and Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and having relationships with people like Kim Novak. The sense that he forgot where he was from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He says two things in the movie that fascinate me. One is, even when you win, you don't win. And the other one, well, I'll let him say it.
Anytime you walk down the street and your own people turn you away, then all the money, the diamonds, the fame, the fortune mean absolutely nothing.
So this got him in his gut, didn't it?
Yeah, he was a very sensitive man. So everything that was sort of a negative reaction to him really touched him to his core. And that particular piece of voiceover is when he's on the Bill Boggs show, and it was right after he had hugged Nixon, and he caught a lot of backlash from the black community for hugging Richard Nixon back in 73. And it was very painful for Sammy because he was booed right after that in Chicago at Operation Push, Jesse Jackson's organization. And he basically asked the audience if he wanted him to sing, he would sing. If not, he would leave the stage. And they did let him sing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a sensitive man. He was a very introspective man. And, you know, everything that touched him deeply. So when he's talking about when you don't win, he's talking about when he was in the Army, and he got into a fight with a white soldier, and he knocked the soldier down and broke the soldier's nose, but the soldier looked up at him. The white soldier said, "You may have beaten me, but you're still a nigger." So he realized at that point of his young life that his fists wasn't going to be the way for him to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that he was going to have to use his talent. And you can see that he had phenomenal talent in all areas: singer, dancer, actor, impressionist, comic. The guy was a multifaceted, you know, talented man.
Yeah, remarkable. I got to ask, what was the deal with the Nixon hug?
You know, it was spontaneous, as David Steinberg says. Nixon, Sammy would hug anybody. He just came out there. He was asked by, you know, to support Nixon for his rerun, you know, reelection, and he came out there, and he was so excited to be out there, he just ran and hugged him. You know, the thing about Sammy Davis Jr., he wasn't calculated. Everything with him was really spontaneous, and this was spontaneous on Sammy's part, but he paid a price, and he even says later on, if he knew what he had known was going to happen to him, he would have never hugged him.
Mm-hmm. Was his life threatened in some places where he performed?
Absolutely. I mean, when he was in Golden Boy, you know, and he kissed the white woman on the stage when they were doing out-of-town tryouts, they caught a lot of flack and reactions from white people. When he was married to Mai Britt, a white woman. You know, from Sweden, he caught a lot of his life was threatened. He had bodyguards around him. You know, he had people. He even had a gun. You know, because you never knew when someone might try to attack him or attack his wife or attack his kids. You know, he was always walking on. You know, what's the word I'm looking for? Walking on
thin ice. On thin ice.
Right, walking on thin ice.
Yeah.
You know, and if you read his book, Yes, I Can, he constantly talks about the fear and the concern about even going in the streets of New York when he was initially married to Mai Britt. The you know, nervous about the reactions and the people looking at him and his white wife. You know, this is Sammy, you know, he made these major breakthroughs, but he knew there was a price to pay. And sometimes he knew that he was going to suffer for that price to pay.
With all of that going on, did he play a role in the civil rights movement?
You know, he's probably one of the entertainers who gave the most money to the civil rights movement. He was always there with his pockets open to help Dr. King, to help SCLC. He was initially reluctant to go south because of his, you know, fear that he was black, he was Jewish, he had a white wife. But he was eventually persuaded to go down to Selma by Harry Belafonte, and he embraced it. You know, he was nervous. You know, but these were the things that Sammy confronted his whole career. You know, as a young black boy growing up in Harlem, being on the road with his uncle Will Mastin and his dad Sammy Davis Sr., his struggles in the army, his struggles for him to come out of the army, you know, and to make it with his uncle and his dad. To be one of the first black entertainers to do white performers as impressions was a revelation, was revolutionary,
mm-hmm.
You know. So this guy was always breaking barriers down. And for him, probably, you know, in a very ironic way, the high point of Sammy's life was to be invited to the White House and to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom, which, you know, on one level is great, but the man who was in the White House, that's sort of ironic.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon.
Yeah. You know, Sam, we probably have some people listening to us right now who were there in 1965 when Sammy and Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and MC Johnny Carson did a benefit here in St. Louis for a halfway house for ex-convicts that was shown on closed circuit TV. It was based from right here. And the video of that became a TV special a few years ago, but there really isn't all that much footage of Sammy. There are a few clips on YouTube. You probably have more in your movie than anybody else alive has probably seen.
Because, you know, in all honesty, Paul, there was so much footage. There is so much footage on Sammy Davis that every time he performed someplace, there happened to be a camera there.
Yeah.
We had footage from him performing in Europe, in England, in Italy, in Germany. You know, in Amsterdam, you know, we got him, you know, with footage when he went to Vietnam. You see a little bit of it in the film. There's footage everywhere of Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
This guy never said no to a camera.
Well, yeah, the good thing about that is that there's a generation who didn't know Sammy when he was alive, who now will get to see what a huge talent he was. And the clips that go all the way back to Playboy After Dark, et cetera.
That's right.
Phenomenal stuff.
Even back to when he was 7 years old and played Rufus Jones for president with the wonderful Ethel Waters. So, I mean, what I think is important about this film is that it's an opportunity to introduce a new generation of young people, black and white, Latino, Asian, whatever, to this phenomenal talent of the 20th century, Sammy Davis Jr.
What did he think of Billy Crystal's imitation of him?
Oh, I think he had some issues with it initially, but he embraced it. You know, when I interviewed Billy, Billy said that when he first spoke to Sammy, Sammy was a little, you know, sort of not so excited about it, but he embraced it finally.
And I also have to ask you about the famous All in the Family episode where Archie, who's this itinerant racist, drives a cab, and turns out that Sammy Davis left his briefcase in the back seat and comes to 704 Hauser Street, the bunker house, to pick it up. And Archie wants to get a picture with him. And when they go 1, 2, 3, Sammy kisses Carol O'Connor as Archie Bunker on the cheek.
That was Sammy's idea.
Oh, what was it?
It was Sammy's idea. You know, Lear says in the film, when you do have an opportunity to watch it, that they didn't usually have guest stars, but Sammy kept pestering him and pestering him that he wanted to be a guest star in All in the Family. And they finally figured out a way to get Sammy in the show. And he said that the kiss was Sammy's idea, which is a great touch.
Created one of the longest laughs in TV history.
It still does.
Yeah.
Every time I show it in a theater and that kiss happens, the audience roars.
Yeah. Last thing I got to ask you about here, Sam, is what his role was in the Rat Pack.
Well, depending on who you talk to, some saw him as an equal partner, some saw him as a junior partner, some said he might have been considered a mascot. You know, I think that, you know, from my perspective, he was an equal partner. You know, he was embraced by Dean Martin and Sammy and Joy Bishop and Peter Lawford, and they were friends off stage, as well as, you know, doing their thing on stage. And, you know, this was a part of that group of guys who had a good time, you know, drank a lot, hung out a lot, enjoyed life. And they were able to express that and articulate that on the stages where they performed. And Sammy loved, as someone said, Sammy loved Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, and
he loved Frank Sinatra.
And did the imprimatur of Frank Sinatra liking him help him in some of those places where, you know, race was going to be an issue? But okay, Frank likes him.
I think Frank Sinatra's personality and presence opened a lot of doors for Sammy Davis Jr.
The movie is called Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me. It is going to screen this Saturday night at Wash U as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. And its director, Sam Pollard, is going to be in town to get a Lifetime Achievement Award and also screen another one of his documentaries. I don't know where a documentarian can find time to make two documentaries.
I don't sleep.
The other one is called Acorn and the Firestorm, all about the group that got involved in a controversy when James O'Keefe shot some footage and it went wild on Fox News.
It went viral. And just before we close out, I have another one coming out in about 2 weeks.
What?
At the festival in New York City about the late Maynard Jackson, the first black mayor of Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow. You really don't sleep, Sam.
I don't sleep, Paul.
They're going to give you the Lifetime Achievement Award this weekend, and you'll just keep achieving. That's a great thing. I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Be good.
Sam Pollard here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.